Hello, and welcome in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean, and what an incredible rivalry weekend we had across college football this past weekend. Six top 25 teams went down. A couple almost near upsets happened as well. So we have a lot to unpack in this week's episode, but I am going to start with what was the upset of the weekend, the biggest upset in the sport's greatest rivalry that we've seen in 30 years, and that was Michigan going into Columbus, getting their fourth straight win against Ryan Day and upsetting the Buckeyes 13-10. There's certainly a lot to unpack from this game. I want to start on the Ohio State side, though, and talk about what exactly went wrong with what was the betting favorite to win the national championship going into that game. I think the biggest and most obvious thing that went wrong with Ohio State this weekend was the offensive game plan going into this game. Ohio State had a Frankenstein offensive line. We've known this for a few weeks now. They've down two starters. They're on their fifth combination of starters on that offensive line. They held up pretty well against Indiana in pass protection last weekend, but they couldn't run the ball against Indiana very well. And Indiana has a great defensive line, but Michigan's is even better. For all of the struggles Michigan has had this year, that defensive line has been the one consistent part of their team. They still have two of the very best defensive tackles in all of college football. Going into this game, you knew that the defensive line for Michigan was their strength. You also knew that running between the tackles was Ohio State's weakness on offense. And that honestly isn't any fault of Ryan Day or Chip Kelly. They had injuries decimate that room. It's part of the sport. You have to adjust and you have to find answers. So going into this game, I didn't expect Ohio State to have much success running the ball. Even so, Ohio State's coaching staff went into this game and their number one goal was to run the football. And I don't know if they were trying to prove to themselves that they could run the ball against Michigan, if they were trying to prove it to Michigan, if they were trying to prove it to the Ohio State fans, to the rest of college football. It was clear throughout this game that their number one priority was trying to run the football, which is admirable to some extent. You've been beaten up in the trenches for three straight years, and they were trying to end that narrative on Saturday. But it was clear in the first half that was not going to work. Again, the offensive line was holding up pretty well in pass protection, but they could not get a push in the run game. Then at the end of the first half, Ohio State ran the two-minute drill. They ran some up-tempo. It was an aggressive, pass-happy drive that ended up going the length of the field. They scored their first touchdown of the game right before half to tie it up, and you felt like, okay, they found the rhythm. Obviously, the run game isn't going to work, but they have the advantage against Michigan on the perimeter. Even though Michigan typically runs with five defensive backs, they just don't have the personnel to cover everyone on Ohio State. And going into that halftime, I was like, okay, Ohio State just played their worst half of football all season long, but they're tied against their arch rival. I was expecting a much more aggressive, pass-happy approach in the second half. But the coaches doubled down. A coaching staff that has typically been really good at second half adjustments all season long dug their heels in and they decided that, no, we're going to keep trying to run the ball. And obviously that failed because their second half offensively was even worse than their first half. But that was the most obvious part. Even if you haven't watched Ohio State or Michigan play all season long, you could tell that that run game just was not working for Ohio State. And the play calling was head-scratching at best. There was just no aggression or rhythm in Ohio State's play calling whatsoever. That was the most obvious part, and that is certainly, I think, the biggest reason why Ohio State lost their fourth straight game to Michigan on Saturday. This was also a failure on so many levels other than the offensive play calling. Special teams for one. Ryan Day's special teams at Ohio State has been bad. Every single season he's been the head coach. It's cost them games in the past, and it cost them another game on Saturday. They had a horrible performance from every side of the special teams. First and foremost, the two missed field goals, both within 40 yards, both seemingly chip shots, both missed really badly. And pre-game, not sure how many people know this, Fielding was actually missing chip shot field goals and doinking them all throughout pregame. It was clear that the wind was messing with him. It was clear that he was not in a good headspace to go out and kick field goals. So I am shocked that there was not a coach that went up to Ryan Day and said, hey, we don't have a reliable field goal kicking today. Take that into account here with your play calling. And it seemed like Ohio State was happy to settle for those field goals, which both missed really badly. Horrible display by Ohio State's kicker Fielding. They also had that 30-yard punt in the first half, which set up Michigan already in field goal range in the second quarter. Ohio State's defense did their job, did not let them really gain any yardage, but they were already set up in field goal range because of that 30-yard punt. Again, Ohio State special teams handing them 3 points. And also something that wasn't really talked about was several misfielded punt and kick returns from Ohio State, both Travion Henderson and Caleb Downs, where they misjudged where the ball was going. They let it bounce, and they had no choice but to pick it up and field it. And instead of Ohio State getting the ball at the 20, 25, 30-yard line, they ended up pinning themselves deep multiple times at their own 10-yard line. And when the offense is sputtering as badly as it was, Ohio State could not afford to give up 10, 15, 20 yards in field position, which is what happened because they were misfielding punts and kicks almost routinely. So top to bottom, another horrendous performance from the special teams unit, which has been a pattern in Ryan Day's six seasons and is inexcusable at this point. And then the defensive side of the ball. Listen, the defense played great. Jim Knowles was hired to turn Ohio State into the best defense in college football, and he's done that. They did their job today. However, they did not come up with the play that they needed at the end of the game in order to get the ball back to the offense and at worst send this game to overtime. Michigan had the ball with just a few minutes left in the game, 3rd and 6 at the 45-yard line. They're out of field goal range. They run the ball with Khalil Mullings, and it looks like he's dead to rights. There are red shirts everywhere. A bunch of people get the hands on him, and it looks like it's about to be 4th and 5 just outside of field goal range for Michigan, giving them a really tough decision. Do they go for it and risk setting up Ohio State in good field position, or do they punt it, in which case Ohio State was likely finished the ball with their hands, whether or not they're able to get into field goal range or score a touchdown, or this game goes to overtime. Either way, Ohio State desperately needed to get this one last stop in order to keep them alive. But a bunch of broken arm tackles, some great patience by Khalil Mullings. He ends up breaking free, scampering 30 yards down the sideline, sets up Michigan for their game-winning field goal. Again, great play, great performance top to bottom from this Ohio State defense. But when they needed it most, the defense could not come up with the stop that they needed in order to extend this game. So the failure from Ohio State goes way beyond just the offense, and also just the overall lack of aggression from Ohio State and their coaching staff. Ohio State has been punched in the mouth over the past few seasons by Notre Dame, by Penn State, Indiana in the first quarter just last weekend, they got punched in the mouth, and Nebraska a couple times. They've given Ryan Day everything that they can handle. Against those teams, Ryan Day has had no problem punching back, not flinching in the midst of chaos, staying aggressive with his approach, sticking to his formula, and being the same aggressive Ohio State team on the offensive side of the ball. They've been punched in the mouth before, and if it's any team other than Michigan, Ryan Day has had no problem punching back. But for 4 straight years now, they have been punched in the face by Michigan, and their tail immediately goes between their legs. No downfield shots. The offense was kept in a bottle all day long. They were just thoroughly outcoached from the beginning of the game to the very end. There were 4th down decisions that would be almost no-brainers if they were playing Indiana that were thrown out the window again. This has been a pattern where you just don't see that same aggression from Ryan Day. They had a 4th and 7 at the Michigan 38-yard line that they decided to punt. And just last weekend, they had a 4th and 10 from almost the same spot on the field against Indiana that they went for and they got. And then on their second-to-last possession where they punted it back to Michigan, and then Michigan ultimately went down and scored that game-winning field goal, they had a 4th and 1 in their own territory at the 25-yard line. And yeah, it's your own 25-yard line. Conventional wisdom will tell you not to punt the ball, but it's 4th and 1. Oh, Ryan Day has gone for 4th and 1s in his own territory all season long. But against Michigan, it didn't even seem to be a debate. They immediately punted the ball just 1 yard short from what could have been the game-winning drive. And then 2 other times, they had 3rd and 10 about, and they just decided to run the ball, seemingly gave up on the drive. One was for a punt and one was for a chip shot field goal that they ended up missing. So there just was not the aggression that Ryan Day has preached about all season long. Again, something about Michigan, they get punched in the face and Ryan Day collapses. And so frankly, for Ohio State fans out there, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say the college football playoff for Ohio State almost doesn't matter. This season is a failure. Even if they can pick up the pieces and win a national title, that would be really nice. That would be a fun end to the season for Ohio State. But no matter what, even with a national championship, this season will have an asterisk on it because they weren't able to beat Michigan. Not only not able to beat Michigan for the 4th straight year, but they had them at home. This was the largest talent gap between Ohio State and Michigan that we've seen since Rich Rodriguez was there, you know, back in 2008, probably. They had 3 years of pent-up aggression. Everyone has been talking about this game for 365 days. Everything was going for Ohio State, and they messed it up. They lost to Michigan. They have no chance at winning the Big Ten championship now. They'll get into the playoff, but no matter what happens in the playoff, this season is a failure. And if you don't agree with me, you just do not understand the magnitude of the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry and what this game means to Ohio State fans. even with the national championship this season, will have an asterisk on it. The number one priority for Ohio State every single season is to beat Michigan, and it is clear beyond a doubt now that Ryan Day is not the guy that can beat Michigan. He talks the talk, he understands how meaningful this game is, and he says the right things most of the time, but it's always about how much the game means to the fans, or he's talking about how scared he is to lose the game because of how tough those losses have been. And so he talks about it year-round, and a lot of times he's saying the right things, but I don't think he actually prepares for this game year-round. Urban Meyer, when he was head coach at Ohio State, he had a coach on the staff whose specific job was to prepare for Michigan year-round, and he always had packages or plays that he saved specifically for the Michigan game. Ryan Day becomes a shell of himself and doesn't seem to have his players ready to play. Again, this is the biggest talent gap we've seen between Ohio State and Michigan in at least 15 years, probably. They have a 6-win Michigan at home, and they got dominated. And if so, I don't think it's a stretch to say if Ryan Day cannot beat them this year, he never will. It just seems to be like a culture problem at Ohio State. They can win almost every other game. They're as talented as any team in the country. They're recruiting as well as any team in the country. But this coaching staff with Ryan Day just cannot beat Michigan. And you felt like something was off leading up to the game, at least in my opinion. Ohio State interviews throughout the week were all about what winning the game would mean to them, how much they're looking forward to this win, how much they've been hurt the past 3 years, and how badly they want to win this game for the seniors that came back, and for Ryan Day and this coaching staff to end the narrative, and you know how much they were looking forward to ending this losing streak. It almost felt as though Ohio State knew that they were the more talented team and that they were going to be able to beat Michigan simply by showing up. Michigan, on the other hand, clearly has been preparing for this game all year. They stuck to their identity. They had the best defensive game plan I've seen all year long. Wink Martindale proved why he is one of the highest paid assistants in college football. He thoroughly outcoached Ryan Day and Chip Kelly. Every time Ohio State wanted to try to take a shot, they had a couple of backs that they attempted. They snuffed all of those out, and they could sense every time Ohio State dared think about running something other than directly up the middle in the A-gap. Michigan was simply better than them, tougher than them once again, and it was clear that Michigan has been preparing for this game all year long. Ryan Day has been talking about this game all year long, but I didn't see a year's worth of preparation from Ohio State's side. It really seemed like they were talking about how important this game was, but from an approach standpoint, it seems like they approached it like every other game. It seems like they were comfortable with a very vanilla approach, just lining up and running the ball right into the teeth of Michigan's defense, and they thought that would be good enough to win the game. I think Ryan Day was simply too scared about losing this game, was too tense and too uptight, and it showed from the play calling to the performance on the field. Everyone was tight. Ohio State had no problem talking smack to Michigan before the game. They had no problem going up and starting a fight with Michigan when they tried to plant a flag on the field. But during the game, during those 60 minutes where you actually had to show up and fight, they weren't doing it. And I think a lot of that has to do with looking to the sideline and Ryan Day, who you know can barely breathe because he's so nervous about the outcome of this game. So I think from top down, there was a culture problem at Ohio State when it comes to beating Michigan. And sure, they can still go out and win a national championship. The expanded playoff has given them that opportunity, but it doesn't matter. The number one priority for any Ohio State football coach is to beat Michigan. And Ryan Day, beyond a doubt, has proven that he is incapable of doing that. Question is, where does Ohio State go from here? Ryan Day has a $37 million buyout, so firing him would be a massive decision, and firing a coach who has still won 90% of his games and has one loss in conference to teams not named Michigan might seem like a stretch. I'm telling you, any Ohio State fan would trade a national championship for a win against Michigan. This game means that much, and like I've said, it's clear Ryan Day is not the coach that is able to beat Michigan, so I think moving forward, Ryan Day cannot be part of your plan. No matter what happens in the college football playoff, if Ryan Day can't beat Michigan this year, he never will, and that needs to be your priority as a university. So yeah, a $37 million buyout sounds horrible, but you're Ohio State, and you need to have your priorities straight. So yeah, it's going to be an expensive decision, but I legitimately think that Ryan Day needs to go. I've been a huge defender of Ryan Day for so long, but at this point, I'm sick and tired of trying to make excuses for him. He can't beat Michigan. That's the priority at Ohio State. He needs to go. I think Ohio State needs an OSU guy who understands this rivalry. I think they need a coach that can bring this grit back to the program that you saw under Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer. Because Ryan Day talks about toughness and grit, all the time, again, usually says the right things, but it just doesn't show up on the field. We have no problem pushing around teams like Indiana and Purdue and Northwestern, but when it comes to being tough against the big boys, Ohio State has routinely come up short when it's mattered most. So if I'm Ohio State, I'm firing Ryan Day before the college football playoff. Again, I don't care what happens in the playoff. A national title would be really nice, and it would make the end of the season a lot easier to accept and could be the start of something great moving forward. But the season's already a failure. I think Ryan Day needs to go now. I think Chip Kelly needs to go now, because performances like what we saw on Saturday should not be tolerated from Ohio State. So I think both those coaches need to go. I think you elevate Brian Hartline to interim head coach. You give him the reins to this offense, because frankly, I think Brian Hartline's pass-happy, more aggressive approach on offense might be the key to unlocking the potential that this roster has, because it's still one of the, if not the most talented roster in college football. Like, this is a team that should be able to score 30 points blindfolded on any defense in college football. They have that amount of talent, even with the injuries on the offensive line. So I think giving the reins to Brian Hartline could unlock something in this offense. I think if they have any chance at picking up the pieces and going on a run in the playoff, it's going to have to be under new leadership. This is a program that needs a hard reset, and it starts with getting rid of Ryan Day. And I think Brian Hartline, if you make him the interim coach and this offense starts to click and you see a new energy and a new fight from this team, and they're able to win, string together four big time wins and win a national championship, then you have your head coach. It's an easy decision. But if they come up short, which honestly I would expect, because I think the emotional turnaround that this team has to do from enduring the worst loss Ohio State has had in 30 years to then turn around and try to pick up the pieces and beat four straight quality teams to win a national championship, it seems very daunting. And I don't know if that's something any college team is truly capable of doing. So I would not expect, even with Brian Hartline at the helm, Ohio State to turn around and win a national championship. So if that's the case, who do I think Ohio State's next coach should be if it's not going to be Ryan Day and if it's not going to be Brian Hartline? Mike Vrabel, I think, is the most obvious choice. He has played at Ohio State, graduated of Ohio State. He coached for Ohio State under Urban Meyer. He's had a great coaching career in the NFL for the Titans. He is a gritty, defensive-oriented, tough guy that I think can instill that grittiness that Ohio State needs. I think he's the kind of guy you give a blank check to and ask him to come back, because I know that Mike Vrabel probably wants an NFL job more than anything, so you've got to give him an offer that he just can't turn down. I think Mike Vrabel is the clearest option for Ohio State. If not him, Chris Spielman, another Ohio State guy, one of the best linebackers in their history. He doesn't have a really strong coaching career, but he's one of the top front office guys for the Detroit Lions. He's one of the guys that hired Dan Campbell. He is one of the architects behind the biggest turnaround we've seen in NFL football this century, turning the Detroit Lions into the NFL's best team. And I think that's the role that the head coach of a major college program has become. You don't have to be such an X's and O's guys. You have to be more of that CEO. You have to know who to hire and make sure you put the right guys in the right chairs in order to succeed. And that's something Chris Buell was able to do for the Lions. I think he would be able to do it for Ohio State. I would give him a call. Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame. He also played linebacker for Ohio State. He's done a tremendous job at keeping Notre Dame's head above water with Brian Kelly going. They're now going to be hosting a college football playoff game. He has Notre Dame seemingly in a better position than they ever were with Brian Kelly. I think Marcus Freeman would be worth an interview. Even Eddie George, the 1995 Heisman Trophy winner from Ohio State. He's the head coach of Tennessee Tech right now, is just wrapped up his third season where he won Big South Coach of the Year. Again, he's just an Ohio State guy that understands this rivalry. And again, that has to be the number one priority when looking for your next coach. Who can beat Michigan, and everything else comes second after that? And I think those would be the top four guys on my list if I'm starting my head coaching search today. Because let's make something clear. I said it. Saturday was the worst loss for Ohio State since 1995 when they were undefeated, had the Heisman Trophy winner, Eddie George, and they lost at Michigan when Biakamatuga ran silly on them. This is the worst loss since that day, and performances like this should not be tolerated from a program like Ohio State. Because let's face it, Ryan Day is John Cooper 2.0. In the 90s, John Cooper routinely was fielding some of the best teams in college football, easily could have had two or three national championships if it wasn't for the fact that he had two wins against Michigan in 13 seasons. 1995 should have been the last straw for John Cooper. They kept him on, and he failed to beat Michigan until bringing in Jim Tressel in 2001. I don't think Ohio State fans are ready to have that same patience with Ryan Day. I think Ryan Day and Chip Kelly need to go yesterday. I think they should have been fired last night. I would elevate Brian Hartline to interim head coach, give him the reins of the offense. If they can catch fire and win the college football playoff, that would be really cool. And then you have your answer at head coach. But for Ohio State fans, the season is already a failure, and the school needs to start preparing for the future now. And that does not include Ryan Day. So that's that for Ohio State. But of course, there is the other side to this massive upset that we saw on Saturday, and that's the Michigan side. And this season has gone from utter failure for the Wolverines to a rousing success. Michigan has played their best football in their final two games now. Wink Martindale, as said it before, proved why he's one of the highest paid assistants in the country. And I think Michigan fans can safely assume that he will continue to deliver a great defense to Michigan. Sharon Moore, I think, still has his flaws as a head coach, but to his credit, he owns his identity. His players are committed to him. And this team, despite all its flaws, bleeds toughness and bleeds grit. And that's what we saw on Saturday. Everything that Ohio State lacks, Michigan thrives in. And that's grit. That's offensive line play. That's defensive line play. And that's toughness. And I think that Saturday was a really great sign of things moving forward. Just the energy around this program has changed so much in the past few weeks with getting Bryce Underwood and now flipping a lot of recruits, all of a sudden going from around the 20th rated recruiting class to a top 10 recruiting class. I will say, I still think that they are 2, 3, maybe 4 years away from becoming a championship contender again. Because listen, Nebraska proved with Dylan Raiola that you need more than just an 18-year-old quarterback to make that big jump. I don't think Bryce Underwood is going to come in next season, be the day one starting quarterback, and all of a sudden, you know, make this Michigan offense flourish. He's going to need time to grow and develop and become a great college quarterback. And I don't think that's going to happen in his first season. And it doesn't seem like they have any reliable options at quarterback other than Bryce Underwood. So I'm going to expect a similarly kind of struggling offense for Michigan next year. They just simply have a deficit at quarterback and wide receiver that cannot be fixed in one season. But things are still trending up. I take back what I said last month when I said that Michigan really should consider firing Sharon Moore. He has turned things around. He never has strayed from who he is as a coach. And that resulted in a big rivalry win on Saturday. So like I said, still think they're a few years away from having legitimate Big Ten title or college football playoff hopes. But Michigan's trajectory now is just night and day compared to what it was a month ago. So I think even though 7-5 record coming off of the national championship to most fan bases would be a disappointment, considering the player turnover and the coaching turnover, considering how poorly the season started for Michigan, I think it's impossible to look back now and call this season anything but a rousing success if you're a Michigan fan. Credit to Michigan and their coaching staff for putting together a great game plan, for pulling off the upset of the season, and for continuing their win streak against Ohio State. They're simply the better, tougher team, and we saw that play out on Saturday. So moving away from the game, there are a couple other rivalry games that I wanted to touch on from this past weekend. The first one was Minnesota and Wisconsin. The Gophers took down the Badgers 24-7 in dominant fashion. And I think this was a really great end to the season by Minnesota. The offense was really disjointed to start the season, but Max Brosmer grew into himself. He became a reliable option at quarterback. He learned to push the ball downfield and take care of the football. Darius Taylor got healthy and really helped that ground game find its footing again. And the Gophers ended up playing some of the best football out of the entire Big Ten at the end of the season. I think the quarterback is still a question mark moving forward because Max Brosmer is out of eligibility. I don't see a quarterback on their roster that can really lead this team to a top 25 caliber season, which is the standard at Minnesota, even though they ended the season really well. I think a lot of Gopher fans are a little disappointed with that 7-5 record, although a win over Wisconsin certainly helps that. I do think Minnesota is going to have to go hunting for their starting quarterback in the transfer portal this offseason, which hasn't necessarily been a recipe for success for most Big Ten teams. Like, yeah, Curtis Rourke has turned out really well for Indiana, but for the Curtis Rourkes, there's also Tanner Mordecai and Tyler Van Dyke from Wisconsin. Neither of those guys worked out. Cade McNamara from Michigan to Iowa, that didn't work out. Will Rogers had a really strong start to the season for Washington, kind of sputtered down the stretch, and Washington's missing out on a bowl game now. Hudson Card at Purdue, he was the second-ranked quarterback in the transfer portal, and we can see how that Purdue football program has sputtered. So, you know, a mid-level college football team like Minnesota going hunting for a starting quarterback in the transfer portal is a dangerous game. So I wouldn't expect a huge turnaround next year. I'm not going to be calling for Minnesota to win 9-10 games and maybe sneak into the college football playoff. But that being said, Minnesota as a program, I think, is still as steady as any in the Big Ten. They're not going anywhere. I think PJ Fleck, despite some early talks in the season about maybe being on the hot seat, he has this program in a really solid spot. Darius Taylor, their star running back, he will be back next year. Their offensive line should be a lot more experienced next year. Coy Parrick, their freshman defensive back, one of the best freshmen in all of college football. Guys like linebacker Maverick Baranowski, they continue to develop. Minnesota coming into the season was a team I was really high on, and they certainly had a slow start, but they finished great. That was a dominant victory over their rival. And I think considering how slow their season did start, I think a 7-5 season with a win over their rival and an opportunity for a bowl win, I think is a nice way to end the season. And PJ Fleck should continue to keep Minnesota a winning football program. But on the flip side, Wisconsin, it's been more of the same all season long and really all of the past two seasons. They got dominated in the trenches. They had only 1.6 yards per carry on offense, allowed Minnesota to have 4.7 yards per carry. Just horrendous quarterback play again from Braden Locke. He had a 32 quarterback rating, less than 50% completion, and just overall bad defense, allowing almost 6 yards per play from Minnesota. And I understand that the Phil Longo experiment was a failure, and you can bash that as much as you want. Trying to implement a fast-paced air raid scheme at a place like Wisconsin never really made sense. But just how quickly this offensive line has fallen off is incredibly concerning. And I think their matchup against Minnesota just put a spotlight on that offensive line. This is traditionally Wisconsin's identity. Going back 40 years, they have always had consistent offensive line play. Even in their down years, you knew that you were going to have to win the line of scrimmage if you wanted to try to beat them. And that was going to be a challenge. Strong offensive line play has always been Wisconsin's identity, and now that seems to be utterly lost. To put it simply, this has just been a horrible season for the Badgers. I didn't think that this was going to be the year where Luke Fickell really broke through and we saw the true potential of what he can do at Wisconsin, but you would at least hope that this season they would start to take some steps forward, that we would see some things to build on, where then we go into 2025 when we're thinking, okay, now's the season for Wisconsin. But really, looking back on this season, I think they took a step back in virtually every area. And looking into 2025 now, Wisconsin has question marks at every single position group. There is not a single position group where you can look at the talent that they have returning and saying, okay, they are set there. That is going to be a strength for them in 2025. That's just not the case. It's hard to piece together how is Luke Fickell going to turn this around and get Wisconsin back into being a winning team in one offseason now, because it seems like he has to do a hard restart from his coaching staff to the way he constructed his roster. So it's difficult to envision a path for a successful season for Wisconsin next season. I think the biggest things he's going to have to address will be the quarterback and the offensive line. Offensive line loses a ton of experience, but given how they've played the past two seasons, I think adding some fresh faces in there might actually be the best thing for that offensive line. Luke Fickell might need an entirely new offensive coaching staff as well. And then if you look at the quarterback room, they had Mabry Matower, who was a 2024 four-star, a true freshman quarterback who didn't see the field this season. He apparently impressed coaches in practice down the stretch of this season, but obviously not enough to take the job from Braden Locke, who struggled all of last season and all of this season, is clearly not their answer moving forward. The transfer portal has not worked out for Wisconsin. Tanner Mordecai played really poorly last year. Tyler Van Dyke seemed to be at least a step forward this year before going down for the season. Wisconsin will need to go back to the portal at the very least for some quarterback depth. And I think trying to get their starter from the portal, I mentioned it with Minnesota, it's a dangerous game for a mid-level college football team to go and bring in a one-year rental in the transfer portal. It hasn't worked out for them the past two seasons. That might be what they need to do next season. And they could turn to Mabry Matower as their starting quarterback next year. But I think even if that's the case, it's really hard to imagine Wisconsin getting great quarterback play next year. You look at Drew Aller, who was the number one quarterback in his class. Even he needed a season of growth to get to where he is now, which is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Dylan Raiola, the number one quarterback in his class. He had a very up and down freshman season. Miller Moss at USC in his first season as a starter. He struggled, ultimately got benched. So I can't imagine Mabry Matower will be in a position to be the strength of Wisconsin next season. Even if he is the starter, I think Wisconsin's going to be a team that's going to have to win without a great passing attack. So it feels weird now. We're going to be entering year three with Luke Fickell at the helm of Wisconsin. but this Wisconsin football program has as many question marks as they've had this century. Luke Fickell was supposed to button up a lot of these problems, and things have just seemed to have gotten worse. I'm certainly not advocating for firing him, but I think that he needs to do a hard reset, evaluate every coach on that staff, and make some extreme changes and get the right people into this program, because this season is nothing short of a disaster for Wisconsin. He has a lot to fix, and he has a lot to fix quickly, because another 5 or 6 win season will not be tolerated by Wisconsin. Great end to the season for Minnesota, pretty much as bad of it a season as you could have imagined for Wisconsin. And another rivalry game that took place on Black Friday, Nebraska once again choking a game away, losing 10-13 at Iowa. And for Nebraska, this loss was almost identical to the loss they had in 2023 to Iowa. They dominated the game. If you look at the box score, you really won't understand how they lost the game. They had the ball near midfield of a tied game late in the fourth quarter with a chance to go win it, but then they turned the ball over to Iowa and set them up already in field goal range, where the Iowa's offense doesn't even need to gain a yard to have a chance at a game-winning field goal. Iowa hits that field goal, and Nebraska falls by 3. That's how each of the past 2 games have gone against Iowa now. And, you know, good for Nebraska for hitting 6 wins on the season, getting to their first bowl game since 2016. That's a major breakthrough for Matt Rhule. I think that win they had at home over Colorado continues to look great in hindsight, the way they dominated that line of scrimmage, and I think can at least give Nebraska fans something to hang their hat on when looking back on this season. Compared to last season, this is still a better team than last year, and that was really the goal, was just to continue to build and continue to get better. So, all in all, you have to say this season was at least a mild success for Matt Rhule, you know, continue to get better and getting to a bowl game, which was the bottom hurdle that he needed to get over this year. But their struggles in close games is impossible to ignore now. It is a really valid concern. Matt Rhule, now 2-10 in one score games in his Nebraska career. That's now a worse winning percentage than Scott Frost had, who was famous for blowing close games at Nebraska. They have talent coming in. They had a top 25 recruiting class last year. They have a top 20 recruiting class right now. They're bringing in a lot more talent at wide receiver, which they desperately need, and bolstering a defense that should continue to improve year over year. So it's hard to deny that this program isn't going in the right direction, but man, Matt Rhule is going to have to figure out why this team can't close out tight games, and he's going to have to figure out a way to win those games next season. Because again, good step forward this year, but a 5 or 6 win season next year will not cut it. He's going to have to, you know, finally break through if he wants to get Nebraska fans off of his back, because I don't think there's any Nebraska fans calling for his job right now. But if it's the same story next year, great defense, but up and down quarterback play and losing a lot of close games, Nebraska fans aren't going to have patience for that. Devastating loss for Nebraska. The lucky thing is, this is not the last time we'll see them this season. They get a chance to go to the bowl game, but it's going to be a pivotal offseason for Matt Rhule, as it will be for Luke Fickell. But then on the Iowa side, I think this is just same Iowa, different year. Really can't be surprised from the showing that they had in this game and really all season long. They are always going to be a team devoid of any legitimate passing attack. That much has been clear throughout the season and against Nebraska. It's going to be a team that wins with defense in ugly fashion. If the schedule works out in their favor, they are certainly capable of a 10, maybe 11 win season and sneaking into the college football playoff. And if they get a favorable matchup, I think Iowa is even capable of winning a college football playoff game. But at the same time, I don't think this is a program that's really capable of winning the Big Ten in the modern state of the sport. So yeah, it was a great win by Iowa. They overcame a lot of adversity in that game to pull off the win. But it's what we've come to expect from Iowa. As long as Kirk Ferentz is the head coach there, they're going to be a winning team. So Iowa finishes the season 8-4. They're probably going to get blown out by an SEC team in the bowl game, and we'll just rinse and repeat for next year. But, you know, in the midst of the chaos that was rivalry weekend, where we saw a lot of upsets and a lot of poor performances too, we saw Georgia almost lose to Georgia Tech. We saw Ole Miss struggle with a really bad Mississippi State team. It seemed like most of the playoff teams either lost or almost lost this past weekend. But in the midst of all that chaos, we saw utter dominance from Oregon, Penn State, and Indiana. Oregon over their rival Washington, finally ending that 3-game losing streak they had to the Huskies, dominating them. Penn State dominating Maryland as they do every single season. And Indiana dominating Purdue 66-0, reminding everyone how dominant they have been this season. On a weekend where we saw really inexplicable performances from some of the top teams in the country, these teams left no doubt how good they are. And I think all three of these teams are capable of making runs in the college football playoff. And then one last tidbit of news coming out of the weekend is Ryan Walters, the head coach of Purdue, has finally been fired. It felt like we knew this was going to come the entire season, the way they've been playing and putting up virtually no fight in a lot of these games. It was just something that had to be done. I think a lot of Purdue fans are finally happy that this decision was made. Listen, I really like Ryan Walters. I had really been rooting for him. I think he's a great guy. He's always carried himself with integrity. But what Jeff Brohm built at Purdue has been just decimated in two short seasons. It started when Ryan Walters more or less cut 20 players from Purdue when he first got there, and has continued with lackluster recruiting and lackluster performances on game day. Purdue went from being in the Big Ten title game in 2022. Granted, that was with divisions. They won that kind of weak Big Ten West. Even so, they went from being in the Big Ten title game in 2022, two short seasons later, Purdue is now the laughingstock of college football. So I think it was good on Purdue to finally make this decision, draw the line in the sand that, listen, we're a basketball program, but we're not going to accept this level of mediocrity from our football program. So it was good to see them move on. I'll be very interested to see what direction this head coaching search takes them. I would expect them to find a more offensive-oriented head coach. Clearly, Ryan Walters' defensive approach didn't really work. And I feel like that offensive-oriented approach aligns more with what we've seen out of Purdue for the past 25 years. But that'll be a really interesting head coaching hire as we kick off this offseason. That was the weekend across the Big Ten. And now we are gearing up for an unexpected Big Ten championship match of Oregon versus Penn State, which should be a fascinating matchup. I feel like no one is really going to be giving Penn State a real shot in this game. But I'm so excited for this game, and we will break down that game later on this week. I would not be surprised at all if Penn State is able to pull off that upset. But before we end today's episode, I have to do a little bit of college football playoff talk. With so many teams losing, it seems like the entire bracket is on fire. So let's try to make some sense out of what we saw this past weekend. I think some of my biggest takeaways: SMU continues to be dominant, beat up on Cal to finish 11-1. I think SMU is locked into the playoff now. Even if they were to somehow lose to Clemson, who is now 9-3 and desperately needs to win this ACC championship to get into the playoff, I think even if they lose to Clemson, I think SMU has done enough this season to lock into the playoff. And if they beat Clemson now, they're going to be the third seed in the playoff. I think the Big Ten and SEC champs will be 1-2, and SMU is looking really good as a third seed, and the Big 12 champion likely the fourth seed. But Clemson upsetting SMU is the last bit of chaos that we can really see in this final weekend of college football that could, you know, turn this playoff race on its head. So, assuming SMU beats Clemson, we're going to see four Big Ten teams. I think Ohio State, even with that horrible loss to Michigan, I think they are still locked into the playoff field. And then SMU will be the one ACC team. The Big 12 is only going to get one team in. The Mountain West is only going to get one team in. And then there's Notre Dame, which leaves four SEC teams, Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee. They are all locked in. And that unlocks then a massive debate between Alabama and South Carolina, maybe even Ole Miss, depending what your perspective is. But that's going to be a massive debate between a few 9-3 SEC teams as to who gets that last spot. Between South Carolina and Alabama, the debate would really be who's playing better right now versus who has the better resume. Because Alabama beat South Carolina head-to-head, and conventional wisdom would indicate that should put the debate to rest, it should be Alabama. But Alabama did not play very well down the stretch of the season. Obviously, they putting up 3 points against Oklahoma, and even against a really bad Auburn team, they looked a little bit sluggish. South Carolina, meanwhile, you know, pulled out a huge win on the road at Clemson, and I think is undoubtedly playing better football than Alabama is right now. So that will be a fascinating debate. I can't wait to see how many SEC pundits try to claim that Alabama and South Carolina should be in over Ohio State or Indiana, which is obviously an incorrect opinion, but it'll be fun to see SEC teams clamor for more teams in the field. But if Clemson does upset SMU, what does that do to the field? I think, again, you still have the four Big Ten teams. You still have the one Big 12 team, the one Mountain West team, Notre Dame. But now you're going to have two ACC teams. I mentioned, even with a loss against Clemson, SMU is going to stay in the college football playoff, which means that debate between Alabama and South Carolina is pretty much over. And then we're just going to have three SEC teams in: Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee. So honestly, Clemson beating SMU will make the playoff decision, I think, a little bit cleaner. There'll be a debates to had about seeding. Do you put Clemson over SMU, even though SMU has the better resume but lost to Clemson? So there'll certainly be debates to had between the seeding, but if Clemson beats SMU, I think the 12 playoff teams are solidified and there's not much debate around the teams that are included. And speaking of seeding, I think another interesting thing to watch when the rankings come out on Tuesday and then next weekend for championship weekend will be which teams will get home games for those first round playoff games. I'm of the opinion it should be the loser of the Big Ten championship, the loser of the SEC championship, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. I think those are the four teams that should get home games. 11-1 Notre Dame is a no-brainer, and I think the loser of the Big Ten and SEC championship is a no-brainer as well. You certainly should not be punished for qualifying for your conference championship. The debate really will be, I think, between Ohio State and Tennessee as to who gets that final home playoff game. And I would go with Ohio State. Yes, the last time we saw Ohio State play was one of the ugliest games I've ever seen. However, Ohio State has two wins against Penn State and Indiana, which are better than Tennessee's best win, which is at home against Alabama. And Ohio State's loss to Michigan, I don't think, is as bad as Tennessee's loss to Arkansas. And Tennessee is also a team whose offense just has looked disjointed ever since September. They really have not gotten going at all in SEC play. They had their best game really since September against Vanderbilt, but again, that's against Vanderbilt. So I definitely think Ohio State deserves to stay above Tennessee and get one of those home playoff games. Assuming SMU beats Clemson in the ACC championship, what would those first round matchups look like? So I think Notre Dame will be the 5 seed. I think they will be the highest ranked non-conference champion, and they will play the 12 seed, who I think will be the Big 12 champ. I think that's whether it's Arizona State or Iowa State. Then I think the loser of the SEC championship will be that 6 seed, and they'll probably take on the eleventh seed, who I would expect to be Boise State. You know, if UNLV were to win the Mountain West, I'd probably bump the Big 12 champion up to 11, and then the 12th seed would be UNLV. But let's assume Boise State is going to win the Mountain West. And then I have Ohio State and Penn State as the last two home games. I would actually say Ohio State above Penn State, mainly because they beat Penn State on the road. So I would have Ohio State hosting Indiana for a second time, and then Penn State hosting Tennessee. Now, I do think you can swap Notre Dame and Texas for the 5 and 6 seeds. Texas is 11-1. They had a dominant victory over Texas A&M. They're going to be number 2 in the next college football playoff ranking. So losing to Georgia shouldn't be a huge knock on them. I wouldn't be surprised if they stay above Notre Dame. And then again, Ohio State, Penn State. I have Ohio State above Penn State because of that head-to-head. But also, you can argue Penn State's playing better right now than Ohio State is. And if Penn State puts up a really great fight against Oregon, I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State stays above Ohio State. But obviously, some upsets could really mess with this. If Texas beats Georgia, all of a sudden Georgia is a three-loss team. Would they still host a playoff game, or would you knock them below Tennessee even though they have that head-to-head? If Penn State wins the Big Ten championship, I think Oregon is then the 5 seed, which would then, you know, knock Notre Dame down a rung and probably the SEC title loser. So again, there is still a lot to be figured out as far as how the seeding goes, and we'll figure that out more so on Tuesday when the college football rankings come out so that we can understand where they see the pecking order. The field is almost set. We're just going to have to figure out how the seedings are. And as far as the playoff goes, I think that Ohio State is the biggest wild card. I still think they have the talent to win the national championship, and you could chalk that performance up against Michigan to just what rivalry games do. And they could feasibly turn around, open up the offense, and have a performance like we saw in 2022 against Georgia, where they almost pulled off that upset. And if this offense wakes up and leans more on their talent on the outside, I think they have as high of a ceiling as any team in college football, considering how this defense has played in the second half of the season. Ohio State has the talent, they have the tools to still be a national championship team. But this team also might be just broken. We don't know if Ryan Day will still be the coach when the playoff comes around. Do these players care enough to pick up the pieces? Because I mentioned it before, just the emotional turnaround they have to go from losing a game like they just lost to then having 4 straight quality opponents you have to beat in order to win a national championship. If they had to host Tennessee right now, I would probably take Ohio State. But if they are just not with it mentally, if they just don't pick up the pieces, this game will mean everything to Tennessee. Tennessee is going to bring it. And if Ohio State just isn't ready, if they just aren't recovered mentally from that upset against Michigan, I could see Ohio State going on a run, and I could see him winning the national championship. I could also see him losing the first game in spectacular fashion. It's really hard to figure out And that's why they are the biggest wild card, because their ceiling and their floor are so far apart from each other right now. So it'll be really interesting to see where they end up sitting in this playoff. That being said, I think Oregon is clearly the best team in college football right now by a wide margin. They have just been consistent all season long. If you're betting on who the national champion will be right now, I would put my money on Oregon. But again, they'll have to beat Penn State in the Big Ten Championship and then have three straight tough games in the college football playoff. Anything can happen. You don't bring your A game one day, and the best team in college football could be bounced from the playoff. So it'll really be fascinating to see how this playoff unfolds. But one thing is for sure, I think that we are wrapping up one of the wildest regular seasons I can remember. I think this has definitely been the most fun regular season to watch since 2007, where we had number one teams losing every single weekend. But that'll do it for this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. Appreciate anyone and everyone that's out there listening. Hope you enjoyed a fantastic rivalry weekend, and hope you're gearing up for what will be another great weekend of college football when we see conference championships kick off next weekend. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at The Floor Slap, and make sure you check out our website, thefloorslap.com, where we are posting articles weekly. And Jordan is doing a great job covering college basketball, which has gotten off to a scorching start. This has been the Big Ten Blitz. I've been your host, Sean, and I will catch you here next time. Thanks.